Well, good morning, everyone. Please pardon my throat, a little bit of whatever this is, laryngitis. But so we're here to talk about the Lawndale Diabetes Project, and it is a cooperation between Blue Cross and Blue Shield. And the project actually takes place. I don't think I made that one first, but it looks like it is. So I'm going to go back because it looks like that slide is first. And we're going to see if it comes up. So we actually had a video to show you all, a video of the work that we're doing. And we're going to take a moment, watch the video, and then see if I can pause it. Oh, you want to turn it up?
It's up.
All right.
And,
okay. Okay. Yeah, we tested it the other day. All right. Well, while we're waiting on that, we'll talk a bit about where North Lawndale is. It's on Chicago's west side, and any of y'all may not be familiar with Chicago, is that it's a community of neighborhoods. It's about 77 community areas broken up into the city, and essentially, you know, the city is broken down in racial, ethnic groups, and also along class lines. And so North Lawndale is, again, on Chicago's west side, is predominantly African-American community. And we also are working in South Lawndale, which is only separated by North Lawndale by a park, essentially, and it is predominantly Hispanic community. Both communities have very high prevalences of type 2 diabetes, with North Lawndale having a diabetes prevalence, community prevalence, based on a community survey that we did, and we'll talk a bit more about that, of 28%. And currently, based on our door-to-door surveys in South Lawndale, the community prevalence is about 17%. And so, essentially, we had this video. We were going to show you some of the highlights and some of the testimonies from people who have participated in the project. And then after we do that, just kind of set this up a bit, talk a bit about the training for the community health workers, and then they'll share some of their experiences, and then we'll talk about some of the outcomes and some of the work that we're doing. So the video is actually set up here and running, and we'll see if we get some time, some sound. He just signaled me to see if that they think they turned the sound on. Yep, it's going to come up now. Okay, well, we can skip it, I guess. If we can, I guess we'll have to skip it. Oh, I can hear it here. Okay. Yeah, if you guys want to. Okay. So we only have so much time, so we'll just continue with the presentation. That's it. So we tested it the other day, and it worked well. But so now we're just trying to work on the sound. So. So I'll keep going. So here's just a picture of the two community areas. And where they, the project actually is going to, where it takes place. At the top you have North Lawndale. At the bottom you have South Lawndale, as previously described. Here we have some clippings, some press clippings from the initial phase of the work. So the initial phase of the work was actually funded by NIH, where we went to 2,500 households, only in North Lawndale, covering three contiguous census tracts. And there, what we did was we went door to door just in North Lawndale, and that's where we did our initial community survey and found the prevalence of about 28%. In conducting the neighborhood household surveys, what we've done is that we've offered people who complete the surveys $15 gift cards to actually complete the surveys. Residents agreeing to take part who we find to be type 2 diabetics. And the way that that works, because it seems like the mic isn't working as well. So can everybody hear me okay? He said the mic isn't working as well. So we'll work within the limitations, but we're okay here. So the way that it works is that when we conduct the community survey, the block captains go to the door to knock on everyone's door, and we conduct a basic screening, essentially, and have to answer three questions to determine whether or not someone's a type 2 diabetic. And the first question is, one follows from the BRFSS question of, has a health professional ever told you that you are a type 2 diabetic? The second is that if you are a type 2 diabetic, are you currently prescribed medication for type 2 diabetes? And if so, then the block captain is asked to see that medication. And based on that initial screening, then they're determined to be a type 2 diabetic. Following that, we also measure body mass index and blood pressures, as well as begin to ask other questions that are in the protocol. And the questions cover everything from social support, depressive symptomatology, religious locus of control, you know, to determine whether or not the role that faith plays a role. And we also ask some questions about the neighborhood in general and their perceptions of the neighborhood. One of the unique aspects, and I think very unique aspects of the project, is that our health educators are actually trained to conduct and test for hemoglobin A1Cs in the household. You're using a point-of-care tester that's provided for this part of the project by Bayer. It's called A1C Now. And so Bayer actually sent out a representative to actually train the community health workers on how to take the hemoglobin A1Cs. So by doing that, by doing that, it allows a couple of different things, and I'm going to just kind of keep going because of the time here. So it allows a couple of different things. One, by measuring the A1C in the household, you know, it only takes 5 minutes to do the test, and Margaret will talk a bit more about how that works. But by doing it right there, what it allows them to do is show the respondent where they are in terms of the hemoglobin A1C. So if they're in green, meaning that they're controlled, that means they're at about 7, 7.5. If they're in yellow, meaning that they're above 7.5 to 8.5, close to 9. And if they're above 9, then they're in the red mark. And so based on that, they're able to customize individualized action plans to provide immediate feedback and provide some very specific steps, some small, consistent steps that can help with making lifestyle changes that cover dietary changes, exercise, seeing a doctor, getting medication, etc. I'm going through the slides to allow you all to read the slides, but I'm actually just talking about the program. So the other thing that's unique about this is the way in which we recruit and train community health workers, is that we always recruit and train more than we're actually going to hire. So all of our community health workers are hired full-time, provided benefits, and so we actually write them into, you know, our grant and our funding process as full-time employees. And so we think that's pretty unique. And what we do is that, for example, for the diabetes project, we had a concurrent project running in just the north neighborhood of Humble Park, which is predominantly Hispanic and, you know, specifically Puerto Rican. And we trained together 30 community health workers over a six-week period, where they learned how to talk about diabetes, talk about some of the changes that are necessary. But they also learned how to conduct interviews and, cover issues around individual privacy, But also what was important was, you know, how to be out in the neighborhood, how to be safe, and how to engage people and become very engaging. So we did a lot of role playing. And based on that, those persons who were able to stick with the group, which we are happy to say everyone who started actually finished. And you also receive a stipend at the end of that time period. Is that it allows us to screen for those persons who are going to be our best performers, essentially. And based on that, we hired our best performers. But what that process also allows us to do is train people who are residents and live in the community or who are in the community area who can also serve as supplemental support for us to support some of our activities. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to invite Margaret Shepherd up. She's going to talk a bit about what it is to be a diabetes block captain. And if you have any questions, I think we're saving the questions to the very end. And you can feel free, and I'll be back up to kind of wrap it up and talk a bit about some of our results. But
good morning. I am a diabetes block captain, and what it is to be a diabetes block captain means that I go out into North Lawndale, door to door, and into the communities, to the churches, food pantries, wherever there are people that I can get in to see, I go. And what I do is try to identify people who are diabetics. Then I try to identify people who are diabetics and don't know it. That's why our A1C is so important. When I come into the home, and I ask you if you have been told by a physician that you are a diabetic. Some people know that they're diabetics, and so they're able to tell me that they are, or the medication that they're using. But we do an A1C to see where those levels have been within the last 3 months. Many people say, yeah, I'm a diabetic, you know. I take medicine, I'm on insulin, I'm in control. I eat, I exercise, I do all the proper things. But that A1C gives me a range within the last 3 months where you've actually been and if you're in control or not. And by the fact that it only takes 5 minutes is really a plus, because a lot of people who think that they're in control are not in control. They're really seriously elevated. And so this, I mean, alarms them to let them know where they are, and then it gives me the opportunity to talk about how you're taking your medicine, if you're taking it properly, what are you eating, are you exercising, setting up action plans, and then in 3 months letting them know, I will return. Let's see if we can't bring this level down to where it should be by eating properly, taking the medication the way it should take, doing more exercise. So being a block captain is it's more than just identifying. It is trying to take care of the whole person, because we found out that it is the whole person that needs the help. You just can't tell them to eat and just leave them, or you just can't say, don't do this or do that. There's a lot of factors that plays into being a diabetes block captain.
Margaret, could you just mention a couple of other problems that you encounter in the community when you go into people's homes and talk to them?
Okay, some of the things that we encounter, especially with social issues going on, people, you know, they can't afford to eat properly because they're trying to pay the rent, they're trying to send the children to school, they have families, the lights, the gas. There's so many things that's going on. Some people don't even have transportation in the black neighborhoods and things. There's not proper grocery stores where you can get the fresh fruit and vegetables and things. They don't have transportation to get out of the neighborhood. And so they're dealing with a lot of social issues, private, personal things going on in their lives. And so we encounter all of those things, because sometimes before you go in and can really identify, talk about being a diabetic, they want to talk about the landlord who is not properly heating, or the lights are not properly right in the, you know, they want to talk about all these other issues that's going on in their life. And being a block captain, you must listen, because you want to get to the real reason that you are there, and that is their diabetes. But all of these other things sometimes come before, and it's up to the block captains to try to listen and help in whatever way they can.
Is anybody depressed?
Oh, depression is one of the major things that we found out there is people's not depressed. And what happens is, you know, we have a survey, the survey that asks you, are you depressed? You know, and I've had people to break down and literally cry because they are depressed. You know, some of them are on depression medication. Some of them, the doctor told them they need to be on it. They don't want to take it. But, yeah, they're very depressed because it is a depressing situation. Not only do you be depressed because you're diabetic, but you're diabetic with all these other problems going on.
So, like Margaret was saying, diabetes block captains, they, at the end of the day, they end up giving the individuals an action plan. And the action plan, they inform them about better fruits and vegetables, lower fat and sugar in their diet, exercise, you know, certain components, but try to fit it into the work style or the lifestyle that they have. Because like Margaret was saying, sometimes they don't have access to grocery stores. So one of the main program components are like the diabetes black captains. So they're the ones that go out into the community and they actually meet the individuals, work with them one-on-one, and the diabetes black captains come back to Mount Sinai Hospital and they end up informing us about the individuals that need certain resources. Sometimes they need, they don't have doctors. They haven't seen doctors for months, for years. And so we're just trying to set them up with an appointment. So we send them over to our disease management team. We inform them of where they, the first name, last name, you know, their what their A1C levels were, how old these individuals are, when the last time they actually saw a doctor was. And then they work with them, with those individuals, to try to get them an appointment with our clinical staff. And we do have two clinical staff on call for to help us out that have allotted a block time on certain days for our individuals to come in and see those doctors. And then those doctors eventually end up sending them off to endocrinologists, either being having to weight loss or physical therapies, because we, like Margaret was saying, we don't find these individuals that just have diabetes. They have other different endocrinological problems, such as kidney failure or eye problems, glaucoma, and it's a whole aspect that we have to think about for the individual. It's not just that we're just helping them with their diabetes. We're helping them with their stomach problems, their depression, and everything else. So we have these disease management team that works with them and helps them throughout the process with the hospital. And we also have partners, community partners that we've partnered up with. I know we have the Diabetes Learning Circle, and we've partnered up with Advocate Bethany in Chicago. And they actually help us with providing with us a site to help cook our do our cooking demonstrations on certain days of the weeks when they're doing their learning circles. We have social services. We provide care for them as well at times. Education and support, which is what we do, is that's a diabetes learning circle class. And it's between 10 and 12 weeks. And at the end of the 12 weeks, they get $120 stipend just for showing up. So it's an incentive for them. They're asked to come to these classes. They're giving transportation to and from their homes. And they're being paid to come and then be educated. Provides certain different types of supports in the like mental substance abuses, just being able to allow them to give them those resources to go to. We also provide prescription assistance. I know they have a class where they can bring in their prescriptions and talk to pharmacists and then see if there's any way that they can change their medication or just if their medication is outdated, the new medication. It's really good. And then like Margaret was saying, they go to food pantries, so we also offer them areas where they can go and get free food from the food pantries in Chicago.
What so I'm going to put a little finer point on it. Last 3 minutes, 5 minutes. And, huh? Okay. So, so in the community, we try to do is we try to build up momentum in the community, build up community knowledge about type 2 diabetes. So in addition to going door to door, and I said identifying persons who are both confirmed as having type 2 diabetes, as well as those who are at risk. So using an Archimedes risk assessment, we basically look at family history, BMI, blood pressure, and other symptoms to determine whether or not someone's at risk. And what we found, essentially, is that in the community of North Lawndale, preliminary data, our data from an initial wave is that 40% of the people we interviewed out of 1,100 and 94 people were actually at risk for type 2 diabetes. And so, and then what we try to do with those persons is make an appointment for them to actually see a doctor. And so, and have a clinical confirmation of their status. Now, what Mount Sinai Hospital did to help facilitate this is that Mount Sinai offered the clinical follow-up services for free. So the persons did not have to worry about getting a bill or anything like that. And we find that that is a huge issue for a number of persons who are afraid to enter the health system, is that they're really afraid about, you know, getting a bill. And so even for those who are confirmed type 2 diabetic, for those who did make their appointments, about a third of those who actually made their appointments who were formerly did not have a clinical diagnosis of type 2 diabetes were found to have type 2 diabetes by a physician. And so once that happens, we then have them meet with a financial counselor to see what kind of other services they can enroll in, get them on a sliding scale to come back and see another clinician, and then do that follow-up. What you're looking at here is a diabetes food label that we have worked with some of the stores. So there's one store in North Lawndale, and we'll be doing the same thing in South Lawndale. But what we did in North Lawndale is just one store for 40,000 people in the community. And so this store actually has agreed to partner with us to take the labels, the diabetes food labels, and put them on certain foods on the shelves. And so with that, that helps. It's a win-win relationship here with the grocery store. Essentially, the grocery store owner has an opportunity to move product that formerly wouldn't move, and we have an opportunity to educate and enrich the lives of people in the community. Now, what you see up at the top left, there is Chef David Blackman. Chef Blackman is the executive chef for Chicago Public Schools, and he also directs the culinary arts program for Chicago Public Schools, which is in several schools across the city of Chicago. What David does on occasion, and he's going to do it again this month, is once a month go shopping, you know, buys foods that are diabetes friendly for people that are right off the shelf, and he prepares it right there in the store. And with that, people are able to see that not only can you purchase food that's very healthy, but also you get a chance to taste it and see that it's also very tasty and learn a new way to cook it. We're very excited now because in addition to David Blackman, we have another chef that's joined our system. And because we just got launched last week, a kickoff, we have a WIC kitchen where it's 8 stoves where we'll be teaching young mothers who are enrolled in WIC how to cook. And they'll be sharing. We'll be sharing that kitchen with them. And the USDA and the WIC program of the state of Illinois help fund that kitchen, and I currently help support one of the chefs, and then we're supporting one of the other chefs from our grant. So we're very excited about that. You see Margaret. She's sitting here, but there she is right there, is that she's conducting one of our classes. And just briefly, the class is 12 weeks, and it was 16 weeks, but we were able to, after initial 2 cohorts, so you have to finish the class, that people felt it was too long. And so we cut it down to 12, and they feel it's perfect. But one thing that's unique about the 12-week class format is that the first 6 weeks are actually taught by a dietitian and another health educator. And the first 6 weeks focus primarily on food and food issues, specifically issues around portion sizes, which it has been the greatest pushback because we're so used to a larger portion when you're eating. And there's been a number of studies that show how distorted all of us, whether we're overweight, diabetic or not, are portion size distortions a bit off. And then at the second 6 weeks, I think class 8, and Nadia hit on this, but I think class 8 of the second 6 weeks is really important because that day we have a pharmacist, our pharmacist, and we also have a partnership with Walgreens. And they'll come in that day and spend almost 2 hours working with people. They would bring on all their medication, we call it a brown bag, put all your medication in a brown bag and bring it in, and then they'll go through your medication. That's really important in one sense. But what we hear all the time, and anecdotally from the feedback, is they said that's the first time anyone's actually sat down with us and actually explained what I'm taking and why I'm taking it. And they're used to just getting a prescription and walking out the door. And then they work with our health educators because we keep a medication log for them because we do up to 3 follow-ups. And that's how we actually got Bayer Pharmaceuticals to provide us the A1C testing for free. Because Bayer has the product, A1C, now that has never been tested by lay health community workers in the field. It's used by practitioners, endocrinologists, in our hospital system and others as a rapid tester for A1C, so you don't have to wait on the labs to come back. But it has never been tested this way. It allows us to do a couple different things. It allows us to, one, as we mentioned, give them the A1C immediately, but it also allows us to determine whether or not it boosts medication adherence. And our preliminary data shows that it has. We're preparing, we already have two publications that are out for review, and we're working on the medication adherence publication as well. And it shows that it does. And so lastly, the biggest part of all of this with the community health workers in the classes, as well as everything we do, is social support. I say all the time that diabetes self-management is a lonely endeavor because, you know, it's self-management. You're trying to learn how to do it and make the change yourself. And they say that it's very difficult, even in your own family, where you're trying to make the changes. And it's hard to do. We hear quite a bit that, you know, they're trying to make the changes, but it's difficult to pull the people along in your family to make those changes along with you. And this is just some of our materials, the co-brand materials. And then lastly, we've added to the component of screening for pediatric weight management because of the overweight a number of children who are obese. I'll take one more minute and wrap up because it's someone else ready to go. And that we found a couple of different issues. I'll sum it up this way because we've been having a lot of meetings with this. And I think this is actually also a tip in the hat a bit about what we're going to see with the Affordable Care Act. So we're getting pushback from some of our doctors who have been helping us. And that, and this is something to really consider, is that we get found two issues. We had such an overwhelming response of people who were coming in. The doctors were saying, we don't have the capacity to see everybody. They said, you guys are going out beating the bushes and bringing people in. And we were able to get that through finance helping us. But what they're saying is that, wait a minute, we're a little bit over capacity in terms of people you're bringing in. And we're finding a couple different issues. More than half of the people you all are bringing in have comorbidities, coronary artery disease. Some people are already at the pre-stages of end-stage renal failure. And so we don't know exactly what to treat. You know, you're bringing them in for type 2 diabetes, but it seems that hypertension is really high, or they have these other issues. And we have to figure out, you know, if they didn't have a medical home, is this going to be their medical home? What's going to be the plan? And who's going to pay for this? So we've had to really try to come up with some unique innovations for this. And we went to Blue Cross and Blue Shield. They gave us additional money. It's not enough, but it is enough to get us started, to cover up to the first three visits for someone, regardless if they have insurance or not. And Blue Cross is going to cover that. And then lastly, what I think is interesting is that because of the capacity and overflow, there's an FQHC we approached that's in the community. And we went to and said, well, some of the patients, they live in the community. Can they come here to your FQHC and see you if we have the overflow? And that went on for about 3-4 months. Then we had another meeting, and they said, well, unfortunately, you guys are doing such a good job getting the message out in the community that our patients who are already our patients now want to come in and see us, and we can't take your new patients because the patients who live in the community now want to come in. And those slots that we now have to fill those slots with the people who are already our patients, which is a good thing. But now their feedback is we realize that we don't have the capacity now. So I think it's really interesting that we have community health workers who, this frontline preventive care model, which all of us have been pushing, I'm sure if you've ever been in public health for any time within the last 100 years, you know, we all understand that, you know, frontline preventive health is the way to go. And it's also the biggest cost savings, which is why Blue Cross and Blue Shield is part of this. So I'll sit down, let the next speaker go, and if we'll wait and ask any questions that you have.